find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Charles Baker, a.k.a. Skinny Pete, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey everybody, how are you? How you doing out there? How's it going?
We're curious about every single one of you. Please write us and tell us how you feel.
Sorry, you ever, like, I was just with my 1-year-old niece, and like, you ever like talk to a baby and then be like, God, like, I would never talk like that to anyone. Like, why do we all talk like that?
I think we all talk to babies and dogs weirdly, and I think that's just how we evolved, and that's the way life will continue.
I always thought a great like hidden camera show, I think I might have mentioned this before, would be to put a little tiny hidden camera on a baby, and just like the image of people coming like over them and just seeing that close up, like, like, would be a very funny. Maybe not a show, but little like 2-minute videos, I think would be really funny. I think I'm going to do that with my baby. So,
all right. You're going to get like a full blown camera,
Mike,
installed on your baby,
Mike,
and have like Joe Fernandez in a van outside and all getting all the audio prepared.
Half the reason I'm having this baby is for the 5 minutes of dad material on stage and the content I can produce. Don't you understand that?
I mean, you did say you did love Joe Jackson and the way he parented, so it makes sense.
He's an icon. Look how many successful kids he had. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Honey, if I show it love, it will disappoint me. What do you want me to do?
But anyway, everybody, welcome to Verbal Show. Yeah, this is the first, like, it's funny because today, very, very hot in New Jersey here. And today's like the first day, like the heat and the pregnancy and the uncomfortableness is kind of like being addressed, and the wife is hungry and grumpy. Like, this is the first day I've really kind of seen it. I'm like, whoa, okay, God. Like, right, we had to start like 5 minutes later because I was like, oh crap, gotta help the wife figure out what we're gonna eat because we're like low on food and it's kind of scary. I'm gonna make sure that doesn't happen again.
Do you just like chuck things at her like Obi?
No, I kind of like go to the fridge and be like, we got blah, and just like name everything possible that we could have. We got peanut butter jelly, we got pickles, we got whatever, you know, whatever has to be happen.
I got vegetable oil and a broccoli without the crown on it. You want that? You want fried broccoli stem? Listen, I got a podcast tonight. I don't have time for this. What do you mean this is both our responsibilities?
Sadly accurate impression you just did.
I've been working on it for a while. I said one, I'm like, I can't really do celebrities, but I'll just master Father Scott. That's my plan. So please get popular so I and Tao can be doubly popular, because I'd be popular with the show and my imitation of Father
Scott. I fully intend, I guarantee there will be nights when the baby is not sleeping and we're like interviewing somebody and I have the baby in hand during some of these podcasts in the future. Just to let the audience and you know, Mike, it's a very, very distinct possibility that's going to happen.
Vice President Dick Cheney, I apologize for the screaming baby in the background. I know you hate humans, but thank you for joining Verbal Shenanigans tonight.
I would love to interview Dick Cheney. That'd be a whirlwind. But anyway, guys, I think I tried to intro twice. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, your currently twice a week podcast, bringing you, I guess, radio style guests, radio style banter and interviews with interesting guests every week. So we are back, and we have, like, let me tell you something. We got, like, at least for the next 5 episodes, at least on the calendar, we got some amazing guests for you. And I would say for the last, like, 4, we've had some really, really tremendous ones. Tonight is no different. And tonight's guest, we'll get to him in, like, maybe 20 minutes, 15 minutes, came together in the last half hour. So me and Mike had one game plan. And then tonight's game plan for what we were recording, we record banter sometimes, and we'll, like, insert the guest in. Tonight, we were going to just record banter, no guests. We were like, okay, we'll just have a good old time. And then this guest popped up in the last 20 minutes, and it is not worth not having this guy on. In fact, I cannot wait to interview this dude. So Mike doesn't even know who it is. That's how top secret it is.
Kind of did. When you gave me access to the Twitter account, kind of figured that out.
Oh. All right. Well, that's okay. But anyway, guys, welcome. But we do have a great one for you today, guys. So welcome to the show. Welcome on back if you are a returning listener, and been getting a lot of good feedback.
Hello,
lately.
If you're listening to us on RTF Sports Network, our new avenue of putting our output out there to the world.
Yeah, that's the description, Scott, that really.
Do you like sports?
Yeah, that's the description. Our new avenue of putting our output. That's what we're going to put on the bumper sticker, but we had to shorten it up a little bit, you know.
Well, I had a really great phrase, and I figured we wanted to go international, so I translated it to another language. But then I forgot what the phrase was, so I translated back to English.
Gotcha.
And I'm pretty sure that's what I got.
That's like those things you click on the bottom of, like, Facebook statuses, and then it just translates it really bad. But yes. Were you ever a bumper sticker guy? I don't think I ever had a bumper sticker. No, I hate bumper stickers.
Like, the wife gave me a magnet when we did the half marathon. Mm-hmm. Like, so you put it on there, tell everybody you do 13.1, and then I got the business, and all 3 months later, I guess you didn't like my magnet at all. I'm like, it's just not my thing.
It's on the fridge. It's on the fridge.
It is a very pleasant gift. I'm with you 100% on the running. I love you. I appreciate the gift. But there are certain people in the world, and I am not a part of the world that advertises on the bumper of my car.
No, I can't do it. Can't do it. Well, I got to get into something kind of interesting here.
Kind of interesting. That's way better than what we usually do.
Well, that's our other motto that we put on the bumper sticker: verbal shenanigans. Kind of interesting.
Verbal shenanigans. Okay.
So I'm gonna pull up this text here. But so, long story short, well, no, I guess I'll go the long route. A couple years ago, I started to notice this kid that I went to high school with. You know, like, I was never friends with him. I don't really even know him that well, but you know how you follow people from high school or whatever. Just because you just follow, you know, like, I don't know a lot of my Facebook friends.
It's one of those, I guess, technically we're friends. We were in the same building for 4 years, so I really never chatted with you, but all right.
Okay, so I had noticed about, and I have proof of this, I had noticed about 3 years ago, 3 to 4 years ago, this kid was, everything he posted was, like, really walking the line of being racist. Like, you know what I mean? Like, posting a ton of, like, well, white people are the same amount of killings as black, like, you know, and, like, I would click on his stuff and, like, look at some of his comments, and it was always, like, argumentative and, like, I'm sorry, guys, super duper right wing, like, overly conservative and, like, protecting their history. Like, everything was, like, towing the line where I was like, And the kid was never all there. Okay, he always seemed kind of off and a little strange.
Like, are we talking, I don't know what's the best wording, special off, or just, like,
maybe, like, more mentally
wacko off?
Yeah, more like mentally ill off, like, kind of sick in the head. He seems a little out there, angry, definitely anger coming through his posts. Like,
gotcha.
Okay. So, now I have a group of friends from high school that I've been telling for years. I'm like, this guy, I'll just tell you his name. His name's Nick, because he's a piece of garbage. I said, Nick, dude, that guy's racist, man. Like, I'm telling you. And my, you know, like, some of my group of friends, it's kind of like that one group of friends is like the UN. There's like a Puerto Rican guy, an Indian guy, an Asian guy. Mm-hmm. Like, and we have our little Zoom calls on Fridays. It's like, we represent like every race possible. In fact, like, I'm usually the minority. It's kind of fun, actually.
That's why you don't invite me anymore. Then the white people will be the majority again, and nobody likes that.
It would throw the scale off. It would in fact, in these trying times, I don't think it's a good idea, Mike. I don't think it's a good idea. We're just trying to gain seats in the house of Zoom. You know what I mean? Like, so the other day, this other girl I went to high school with, African-American girl, posts this thing. She's like, well, let's make him famous. Sure enough, it's a post from Nick, the kid I've been saying all along is a ticking time bomb for either two things. I always said some kind of shooting or something, like an act of violence, or just being exposed as like a super racist, right? Okay. So I'm going to clean this up as best I can for you, okay? Because I wouldn't say any of these things, okay? So this one girl said, hey y'all, you know what to do. I was greeted this evening with this lovely message, so let's make him famous, shall we? And I won't say her name. Let's call her, we'll call her Jessica. So he says, Jessica, what are you going to do, you fat, ugly, looking, expletive, looking monkey, N-word, B?
Okay, that seems a little off. I mean...
Okay.
But let's listen to the whole thing. I don't want to judge him yet.
Okay. You disgusting-looking black N-word pig.
Okay. I mean, so far, not too great. Not giving a passing grade, but we haven't heard the whole thing yet. So continue.
Effing racist and terrorist-supporting low IQ piece of garbage. You people aren't even human. You descended from rats and gorillas and monkeys, brainwashed N-word, B-word.
Yeah, he didn't really pick up in the third round, Scott.
His
stock went down.
Talk about a piece of garbage. Okay? I mean, how much more? That is so disgusting and aggressive. I mean, imagine that's your son or your family member or your brother, and you catch someone talking like that. Can you imagine in 2020? Like, that is just a kid that's definitely been raised with hate, has a lot of hate around him and stuff like that. Like, what is your first reaction when you see that, man, or even hear it from me, you know?
The first reaction is, I'm almost curious what she could have done where he just naturally said, you know what? I'm going to send this message because I got to get it off my chest and I feel I'm in the right to do so. And let me just put you forth. And I almost wonder if he felt good after that. If he's like, now I got a big, you know, big weight off my back. I feel good. Yeah. I'm going to have a good day today. I wonder if that's how it is or if, like, his whole day was thinking about that one girl that he went to high school with.
And it's funny because, like, people were commenting, like, oh, that doesn't sound like Nick. I heard he has a black girlfriend and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that doesn't, like, none of that factors into talking like that. Like, you were just an absolute animal. Like, this is someone who's just raised with something must have happened in his life or he had some kind of influence where it was just drilled in his head to be this racist piece of garbage. Like, these types of messages are exactly, and I don't want to get in my soapbox here, but exactly why, like, we as white people, Mike is white, guys, if you didn't know. I know we don't do a lot of video content.
Scott, why'd you have to spoil the surprise?
Blow your cover. This is why what we're doing is this is why hopefully this moment in history will be something that changes the narrative like that. And I love that this person called him out and posted his stuff. And sure enough, the result of this was, okay, like every person we went to high school with plus a million other people like calling this guy out, tweeting him, and his job fired him within like 24 hours of finding this.
Well, not a shocker. Now are the two still friends on Facebook? I hate to think that ended.
Well, there's more to the story. So I had messaged the girl, and I just said like something along the lines of like, "Hey, like I'm sorry you got to go through that. Like I've known this kid is a lunatic, and like you know like maybe I should have said something earlier. You know what I mean? Like to any of his posts or commented or." Instead of talking like I am now to you or talking to my friends or whatnot and be like, this guy's definitely right. Like maybe someone like me, a big white dude, should have said like, dude, come on. Like that's ridiculous. But do I interact with him? No, I don't really know the kid at all. I know who he is essentially. But I just said something along this line. It was fun because we got that like we talked. Like we messaged back and forth and it was really nice like she was telling me, like, you know, like I didn't really experience like racism until like I went to college. Like, she's like, I never really noticed it, and until now. I'm like, you know, it's pretty interesting because we grew up around the same area, and the area we grew up in was like pretty diverse. Like, I would say my elementary school was, I'm just gonna throw like a what I think it was probably like 50% white, and then like the other 50% was African American, Spanish, Indian, Asian, and maybe even possibly more. So I'm very, as the years go on, I am so much happier I grew up in that than just grew up in this like white bread, like white. You know, and you know, we got to talk, and it was really interesting to hear some of her. Like what she was saying, she's like, you know, I never, you know, I always kind of hid like when black issues were being brought up, and she was saying, you know, and now I feel like I don't have to apologize for my blackness. Like she, which is, you know, we have never said those words in our life. You've never said, oh, Mike, I got to apologize, guys. I was a little too white there. You know, you know, so it makes you, I don't know. It's just, and we both said, she even said to me, she's like, these are the conversations that need to happen. Like, white people, me, you, our brethren, our brothers, sisters, whatever, we need to drop our guard, man. And talk and just be okay with asking questions and also be okay that maybe you had a prejudice before, or maybe no one's saying you're a racist pig, but maybe you didn't say something before. Maybe you let something slide. You know what I mean? Like maybe it was okay in public. We're all guilty of it. So it's okay to be wrong. And somewhere in this grand scheme of things, we've taken away the ability to be wrong. You know what I mean? Like to be like, hey, I was wrong back then. Things have changed. You know, like I was right. You know, and I don't have that much to even be ashamed of, but it's all, now I'm thinking like maybe I could have done more along the way or opened my mouth when I've experienced some of these things.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you first kind of get enlightened by some of these moments. Like I remember a coworker I was really good with, friends with back in my days in New Jersey and all, like every time I was in Sophia and all, he came out and all, he's a black gentleman and and we were like really close friends. We chit chat about stuff and it had to be like, what was the year Garnett went to Boston? Was that 08?
I was just going to say 08, which is really weird that I would ever remember a year that in basketball that specifically.
It was somewhere around that time. And like, cause we were just like BSing about basketball and like I talked about, this was, I think, I forget if it was after the trade or before the trade, but I brought up how like Garnett was kind of like on the fence on going there because of the racism he says that happens in Boston, which I'd never heard of. And he's like, it's 100% there. He's like, That is the only place on the planet I got straight up to my face the N-word.
Yeah.
Like, flat out. Now, he didn't say, like, all Boston's bad or anything like that, but he informed me of the culture that's over there and stuff like that. And we even, there was even kind of a funny joke after that. And he's like, you have to go up there and see that sometime. I'm like, well, no offense, bro. They see me. They're probably like, I probably won't get that. And he was laughing his ass off.
Yeah.
They'd probably be like, oh, yeah. Well, Warren, I went to Boston. Everything was great. And all, they loved me. I didn't see what you saw and all. But all kidding aside, I mean, it's as much as that opened my eyes, we go 12 years later, 2020. Is it Mookie Betts, I want to say? Some current baseball player. Basically, he recently said, like, every team he goes to, a part of his contract in his contract is the no trade clause to Boston, because he goes there and, like, the fans will just straight out N-word, not blink an eye. One is like, every time you go there, there's some different.
I don't think it was Betts because he's on the Red Sox. So I do know what you're talking
about. Right.
I do know what you're talking about, though.
Somebody recently, yeah. I think he's with the Turner, I want to say.
I don't know.
It's like, it's sometimes it's a super, super eye opener. I'll even like say, like, an eye opener for me was like when I was, you saw me like at my most exhausted working for the company. And like the running joke was, India calls me at 3 a.m. and all. And for people don't know, we have we had a knock team, which is 24 hours. They're made up of techs of India. So I would constantly get a call 4 a.m. on a Tuesday night or during my vacation, Mike, something's down. And it just
real quick, super, it was Adam Jones, I believe, was the one who.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's it. But I remember I was like, every time it happened, I was just going, ugh. And I had nothing against the guys. They're doing their job, but it's just every time it would be entwined. I remember we were doing a podcast when we had somebody on, and they're like, oh, you look exhausted. And I'm like, oh, I'm just so tired. I'm getting sick and tired of these guys in India call me all the time. And they're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
It is like, you got to watch your wording there. And it was kind of an eye-opener where even – with nothing malice into like ethnicity or who they are, just the presentation of what I said was
right.
Yo, that's not good. You gotta take that back a little bit.
For sure. I mean, so one of the things I was talking to her about was pretty funny. Like I grew up, we'll get to our guests in just a minute here. My dad's best friend was a black guy, also with the same name. His name was Dennis. we called him Dennis and Dennis. It was always funny. And it's funny because my dad can't hear. Like, he's got bad hearing. In fact, that's the reason he didn't go to Vietnam. He was flagged.
Same reason as my dad.
Really? So he was flagged because of his hearing, which got, I mean, in the end, he might have not been here, you know?
Yep.
So I'll take him saying what before I even start a sentence, to have my dad here. But so he had this, he was a black guy named Dennis, and he always hung out, the sweetest man ever, so much so that we called him Uncle Dennis. That was him. He was Uncle Dennis. And it was funny because my friends would come over, whatever, like biking around the house, and I'd be like, oh, my Uncle Dennis is here, because he always drove this really big, big black SUV, like a Navigator or, I forget the other one, Denali or something like that.
Okay.
And now what happened to him, he started gaining weight really bad. He went through a lot of depression, went through a bad divorce, and he went from rail skinny to probably 500 pounds, like, not even kidding. But that's besides the point. That's the sad part. But the point was, like, he would be in the house, and it would be fun. I'd be like, oh, yeah, my Uncle Dennis is there. And people would enter my house, and the look on their face was like, oh crap, like I you know, I didn't expect him to be black, like, because he'd be sitting in there and he was always like, hey buddy, you know, like, oh, I forgot to say, so my dad couldn't hear and Dennis couldn't really speak too well. He when he was younger, he got into an accident and, like, so his speaking was, like, a little off. So, like, when he got excited, like, his speech would get worse. So if you calm them down, you could totally understand him. But when he got, like, rambly, like, he'd be hard to understand. So the joke was, like, oh, Dennis and Dennis, one is black and one is white. One can't speak and one can't hear. You know, like, that would be a perfect sitcom for each other. But it's just so funny, like, that I remember just the shock of, like, people walking into our house and be like, oh, man, like, unexpected black guy. And it's just, and that's by no fault of anyone. It's just, you know, it's just you don't think of that. And that's hopefully what starts to change and the narrative starts to open up. And these are all good things. Listen, no one wants, like, rioting and burning down cities and stuff like that. But things are happening. I know I said this last week, but things are changing. Like, they're going into the police force and investigating who they have. They're going, like, you're telling me they would have went through the police force and seen who's done, like, racist tweets and belonged to these Facebook groups and stuff like that before this? Maybe not. You know, maybe not.
Look at NASCAR. Over the weekend, somebody put a noose in Bubba Wallace's garage.
Unbelievable.
For people who don't know, Bubba Wallace is the only African American driver in NASCAR, and he is the one who basically spoke up and said we should ban Confederate flags at NASCAR. NASCAR actually 2 days later said, you know what, you're right, mm-hmm. and enforced it. I mean, one thing that was brought up, like, as I was watching ESPN, one of the NASCAR reporters, he brought up the most amazing thing is we know about it because he said NASCAR in the 80s, if this happened, they probably wouldn't put it out in the public, kind of go, well, we'll figure this out on our own and nothing would happen.
Right.
They literally, from when it happened, the guy saw it, the drive, Bubba never saw it, they informed NASCAR. They immediately had a meeting and they basically said, we're going to look through every ounce of tape because the whole track has cameras all over. They're going to say, we're going to find this person, whomever it is. They will never be a part of NASCAR again.
And I hope they expose him, just like this kid, how it started this conversation. I hope they expose this guy, whoever it is, a driver, a teammate, whatever, a pit crew guy, a reporter. I don't know who it is. But I hope they just put him on blast if they do find him.
Absolutely. And I actually kind of teared up today. They start, so we got rain out Sunday, and they start the race today by every driver, every crew member helped push his car to the front. And they actually, like, took a picture as a group. And
that's cool.
It, like, he put on his social media, like, literally, you could see everybody. He's saying we're all together and kind of add to the how we have changed. Bubba Wallace drives for Richard Petty. When the Colin Kaepernick thing came out, Richard Petty specifically says any driver who kneels for the national anthem or any crew member of my team, I am going to fire them immediately. They will never work for me again. He is 82 years old. He's in the prime. If you get corona, you're in trouble kind of stage.
Yes.
He went to the race because he said, I needed to hug my driver.
Good for him.
And
yeah, probably changed his point of view, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like, it was like Bubba suffers from depression. It's been well documented. So, like, he was, like, very teary-eyed. And he came up and gave the guy a big old hug.
That's
and,
great. Yeah, that's great.
It was a beautiful moment.
Yeah, I mean, Roger Goodell has changed his stance. You know, like, it's pretty cool. And it's funny because 30 years from now, you might see a Colin Kaepernick statue somewhere, you know, who I watched Liverpool. Liverpool returned yesterday for the first time. And both teams before the game, both teams knelt together down for like 30 seconds. And Liverpool is right back. Trent Alexander-Arnold, African-American kid, had Black Lives Matter cleats, and they were donating them. And the entire Premier League, no names on the back of the jersey, just Black Lives Matter on the back of the jerseys. It's
awesome.
So you're telling me that, like, yeah, this stuff, yeah. Are there people that take advantage of things? Absolutely. Are there people that aren't sticking with the message? Absolutely. But there is change happening. Like, it's right in front of your face. The narrative is changing. And again, it's our job, if you're a white person or someone who's, you know, not directly affected by some of the things, just to listen, man. And I do want to be, our guest is coming up in 2 seconds. I want to follow up with this kid, this guy. So today, right before this podcast, she posts, look at this, y'all. Sorry for the language, but this is what in my inbox, sharing a disgusting racial post made by this dude that has since been deleted. So he said, and I will call her Jessica again. Jessica, don't you effing put my crap out there, you be. And that's irrelevant. Murder is murder. Blacks commit more crimes and white people are shot and killed more often than black. Learn facts, you ignorant person. Where's the proof of racism? You're the most ignorant piece of garbage on the planet. Black people can't be racist against white people. Were you ever a slave or were you alive during Jim Crow? Black people have the same opportunities as white people nowadays. Go ahead. Put me on now, you pathetic, thin-skinned snowflake bee. Look at the percentages up yourself. Look up Roland Flyer, a black professor at Harvard, and see what he has to say. Muhammad Ali was a racist. And that's where the picture ended of the conversation.
Oh, I'm sure he said, but I apologize.
Yeah. But I'm sure he said, but I'm all wrong. And I really didn't mean that. And because here's the thing, right? The first instance, you could be like, oh, I was hacked. Like, you could hide behind that and be like, oh, I was hacked and someone else did this. This kid's doubling down, man. And he's a piece of garbage. Nick Cardinale, you're a piece of garbage.
If we did Dirtbag of the Week this week, he would be that.
Yeah, it'd be him every week for the next month, you know? So I could talk about it more, but I got to make a segue here to our guest, and we'll talk about it more next week. So this came together 20 minutes ago, okay? Mike, you watched Breaking Bad, right? I watched Breaking Bad.
Oh, absolutely.
We have one of the members of Breaking Bad that really played an intricate, you know, his role increased over and over. And he kind of returned. He was in El Camino. You might know him as Skinny Pete. He hangs out with Badger, hangs out with, what's the name of the larger guy with the mohawk? Combo. He's Jesse Pinkman's boy. But his real name is Charlie Baker. And we were able to put together this interview, and I'm very excited to interview him. And by the way, no one guessed our t-shirt giveaway, so it's going to have to roll on to another week. But let's get
Skinny. Does the jackpot double up so that whoever gets next week get two t-shirts?
Yeah, they get pajamas. They get Verbal Shenanigans pajamas. But guys, I'm very, very excited. Let's get Skinny Pete. Actually, Charles Baker, a.k.a. Skinny Pete, on the line. Very excited to talk to him. And let's do it, Mike. First off, thanks for this came together in essentially 20 minutes. So what a great coincidence. And we just happened to be recording also. So that's Mike. I'm Scott.
Hey, Mike, Scott. Nice to meet you guys. Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie, thank you for giving us a couple minutes here. Really appreciate your time.
No problem. Like, I'm stuck in a house with a 12-year-old girl and an 8-year-old kid while my wife is at work.
Yeah.
And so, like,
anything is better.
They're both stuck in YouTube world and Mario worlds. And so all I get is like grunts and onomatopoeia from them. So
yeah,
I'm happy to have someone like, talk to me. Yeah. That's on listen. Hell yeah. Cool.
Actually, I'll be playing Mario Kart during this interview, so I might space out. I apologize, but I'm on level 6. What can I do?
That's generally what Mike does. That's what Mike does. He doesn't pay attention to the guest. He just tries to beat levels in Mario Kart. But Charlie, thank you for I was saying to Mike, I reached out to you because we've been in quarantine, obviously, like everyone else in the freaking country, basically. And every night I've been kind of, I decided to like rewatch Breaking Bad and kind of put it on at night and whatever, fall asleep, get a couple episodes in. And I was reaching out to, you know, I saw your character. And I'm like, you know, he would be, he'd be a cool guy to talk to because he gets to play this like, ultimate, like kind of funny, but also like the ultimate dirtbag too, like at the same time. But there's a humor to it too. Like your character is really funny.
Right.
I guess the first place I want to start with the Breaking Bad stuff is like, when you go for that audition, do you just like get to read like, hey, funny meth addict, drug dealer guy, like come try out. Like, how did you even get hooked up with that?
Oh, that was okay. So, they're shooting in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Albuquerque, at the time, didn't have a huge film community. They were just building their film community.
Right.
And Texas, prior to that, had a pretty good film community going. And there was a casting director who lived in Texas at one point, but then decided she was going to relocate to New Mexico to help build their film industry. But she stayed in contact with the casting director in Texas. And a couple of years later, they're holding auditions for this new TV series for AMC where they want to hire a local hire, which is basically they just want someone cheaper. Just fill in a couple of what they, you know, day player roles.
Okay.
One liner, you know, the waitress, would you like some more coffee? Nope. Okay.
Right.
You know, that kind of deal. And so because Texas didn't have, like New Mexico didn't have a lot of actors flocking there yet. The casting directors kind of coordinated in Texas with Texas and said, hey, can you audition some people for some local hire? And we did what they call a modified local hire, where it would, you know, live close enough and we'll just pay for your transportation and your hotel so you don't have to, you know, drive back and forth between. But so the deal was for audition I went in and was for a skinny stoner.
Okay.
That it didn't have like is going to be a, you know, introducing anybody, didn't have anything involved with what farther than a skinny stoner who is getting high with Jesse with combo with a chubby stoner. It was skinny stoner and
skinny stoner, chubby stoner. Yeah. And what was Badger, tall and stoner?
Badger was Badger.
Oh.
He had a whole different story, which is also another interesting thing too.
But all right.
Originally it was just me and Rodney Rush. We're just supposed to do one episode where we're getting high, smoking weed with Jesse, and then happen to inquire about the possibility of getting some meth. And he at first turns us down, but then we get ready to go, and he then's like, oh, wait, I got some, and lets us try some, and then that kind of spreads the word about the crystal blue, right?
Right.
Well, Jesse was supposed to die in...
I remember reading that. Yeah.
Later, you know,
it's hard to believe.
And they'd introduced Badger already. And he's a comedian. He does improv comedy for a living. I did Shakespeare and like, you know, summer stock theater.
Okay.
So I went in and I auditioned for a skinny stoner, and he auditioned to play Badger. And when he auditioned, he added a little bit of lightheartedness to the role,
right,
that they liked. But he had also been hired to be in several consecutive episodes as opposed to me, who was hired to be in one episode and then gone. They weren't really sure how they were going to use him in those consecutive episodes, but they knew they were going to give him at least three episodes originally. But then they decided they weren't going to kill Aaron Paul. They weren't going to kill Jesse. So they decided they needed somebody. They were going to have him actually die in the confrontation with Tuco, or they were going to, I think there was another storyline where maybe he was going to, or actually Walter White was going to possibly kill him. Were some of the ideas that were, I think they were floating. They decided, no, they needed Jesse, you know, they needed him to live. They don't want him to die at all. So either he introduces Tuco to Walter, or somebody else has to do it. So like, well, who's going to do it? And they went, well, it has to be somebody who could have been in prison with Tuco and lived. And I don't think, they didn't think Badger would have been that guy. They
right.
think if Badger had gone to prison with Tuco, they don't think he would have lived.
Makes
so
sense.
They were like, well, we either have to hold auditions for somebody else and create a universe for Aaron Paul, or we bring back those two stoner dudes and have that skinny stoner guy be the one who's like his friend who introduces him.
I mean, I'm on like rewatch. I'm in season four, I think, like kind of rewatching, and the thought of Aaron Paul's character not being there,
right?
Like it's mind blowing, and it wouldn't even come. And then the movie app, like. Just the fact that someone made that decision one day, like, oh, we can't kill him off, and then the whole series went somewhere else, is amazing.
Right.
Yeah. Just one, I heard a rumor that it was because of the strike, the writer's strike, where they chose not to kill him off. Do you hear anything about that?
Well, the writer's strike did affect our shooting, but I couldn't imagine that they would have, like... They knew the chemistry he had and the power they had with him on the show.
Yeah.
And that it was much better for the show for him to stay than it was for Walt. I think Walt would have ended up like less redeemable than he was.
Yeah, it's that yin and yang that, you know, you hate and love both of them equally. Yeah. And I think that's what's beautiful about that show.
Right. And that's the genius of Vince Gilligan, though, because like he was able to recognize it and go, "Hey, let's go this direction with it and see where that goes." And you know, there were times when like they'd tell me like, "Well, we have an idea where your character might do this. We aren't really sure. Don't buy a new car.
Don't get that Lambo.
And then it turns out." Oh, they did something else. I see what they did. That makes so much more sense. Yeah. Before he met Jane, we didn't know he was going to be meeting Jane. And he was going to have to find a new place to live. And at one point they were thinking, well, maybe he moves in with Skinny Pete. And so I got like, they talked to me, you know, about the possibilities. You know, again, they're like, don't get your whole stuff. We're just thinking of
stuff. Yeah.
And you know, I was like, ooh, make me his roommate. That would be, you know,
but it's so cool.
Again, a totally different story if they'd have done that. So, I just, you know, trust the guys who are making it and go with the flow. And
I love that.
And in improv, you have this rule. It's yes.
Yes. And yeah.
You know? And so it's like, that's what we do. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't improv very well, but I do know the rule. Yeah, and
I love that, man. I love that.
So out of curiosity, when you get this role, where are you in your acting career? For what I read up, like you thought about going into music and then you kind of did acting to kind of help improve like your stage or your voice. I mean, where were you at when you're getting this role? Are you at a point where you're okay, I'm making good money? Are you comfortable? Are you back and forth?
No, I'm still not at a place where I'm making good money and comfortable.
Don't worry. After this podcast, you're going to be.
This is
it.
I've heard. I was like, Conan O'Brien was like, yo, dudes, you should check out this guy.
He hasn't had us on yet, though. It's weird. I don't know.
I don't know. He's hard. He's rough. You know? He's picky, and you got to fight with publicists.
I know. But you can't have two big-headed Irish guys on the same show.
I don't know Conan at all. Where was I? My wife has a great job, and I'm not, like, super great job, but she has a good job she likes, we take turns kind of supporting each other. She was an oil and gas attorney in Texas before we moved to California.
Okay.
And I took over for a few years when we moved out here while she took a break and raised our children. And now that they're like, they can make their own toast, she went, I'm going back to work.
Yeah.
Of course, my entire industry is shut down. So, like, what am I going to do but sit around and do podcasts?
Right. Yeah. Well, it worked out for us. So, that's all that really matters here, Charles.
Yeah.
in the long run, right. When you think about it.
So, when you did get that role, like, you get the role and you know you're going to be filming whatever, even if it's an episode, you're a skinny stoner.
Right.
Did you guys know, like, how good that show, like the writing was, or that it was going to be a big show, or was it just like, oh, I'm going in, it's this show, Breaking Bad? Did you know anything about it?
Okay, well, it was the first time I've ever read a script and went, oh my God, that's a good script.
Okay.
And I've read a lot of scripts and gone, oh, that's good. But I didn't know what good was until I saw a Breaking Bad script. Every show I work on, every movie I work on, everyone's like, yeah, we're gonna win the Oscar, we're gonna win an Emmy. because you want to feel good about what you're doing, and you love what you're doing. You think, you know, that great shot, that one great shot we got, that's gonna make the whole thing.
Right.
You never really know how something's gonna come out. You have a better chance when you're working with people who have had a history of, if not like super successful shows, at least a history of working in the business, just because they know the ins and outs and, you know, all that stuff. But you never really know like how the audience is going to respond. It wasn't until it came out on Netflix in third season that the audience really like.
It's about where I started watching. Third, fourth season-ish. Yeah.
Any other network would have canceled it after the first 7 episodes, which was the first season, just because it didn't have the numbers.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for Netflix and AMC going, yeah, we'll let you guys hang on for another season and see what happens. None of that would have gone on. My problem with like a lot of NBC, NBC, a lot of the networks.
Right.
Is they won't give a show a chance to even get blossom. Started before they start tossing it out the window. And I think they're losing out on a lot of stuff because their accountants have figured out a formula that they like.
I agree, but I think it's also, I think it's put the good stuff on other networks and other avenues and other streaming service. Like, I think it's pushed the creative stuff out, and it's like, well, we're going to have singing shows and The Bachelor. Right. That's what we're gonna have on these networks. Yeah. You know?
Right.
So
right.
One's the least amount of work.
Yeah. So,
trust.
Sure, it was like a network dude who went, reality, that shit's free, right?
Yeah. It's the furthest thing from it.
Now when it start getting big, I'm not sure, was it before or after? Were you getting to a sense of like the scripts are going to change every other day and it's hush hush, or did they always have that plan at the beginning? Or when does it get to the point? It's like literally do not tell a soul anything about this thing.
Top secret.
That kind of just kind of grew into a thing, and it wasn't until the last season that they really started getting hush hush. A lot of that was part, I mean, I wasn't in, Matt Jones and I had this agreement. We both, we didn't like go, hey, we're going to make a deal, but we both had this like, we really liked watching the show, so we didn't read the scripts.
Oh, that's
we
cool.
we only read our stuff that was relevant to our characters so that we knew what we were supposed to do. And otherwise, we would just, like, go home and watch the show with the rest of the audience.
That's fun.
And so, like, we couldn't spoil it very much. I lived in Texas. Like, nobody knew who I was until, like, I moved out here right before the finale. It was weird. I mean, but it kind of grew into this, like, hey, we loved and respected our bosses, Vince Gilligan and all of the producers,
right,
and Bryan Cranston. And so none of us wanted to, like, let anybody down. There was, like, nobody in the crew that was like, oh, I'm going to get these guys, because everybody was like a family. And so by the time we got to the end, we're like, we hadn't changed much crew at all. Everybody was so, like, passionate about what we were doing that it was like you felt like you would be the Benedict
Arnold. Let him down. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. 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 So that was, for me, that was the deal. I wasn't going to give away any information, right, because I cared.
A couple of weeks ago, we had Larry Hankin on. On the podcast, and he was awesome, unbelievable. I mean, that guy could tell you stories for 4 years straight.
I know.
And he was talking about working with Vince Gilligan. And what I found really interesting about Larry said he has really bad dyslexia, and he memorizes his script so much that he knows it way beforehand. And then the day he went in, there was like all these new lines and stuff, and he went into a full on panic and stuff like that, but Vince figured it out for him. So it was really cool to hear about Larry's relationship with Vince and how he worked him into the show. And then I guess I'd piggyback that and ask you, what was working with Vince like? You went from skinny stoner to having a character to really becoming like a pretty, like, you know, you're Jesse's henchman for season after season. What was working with Vince like, and for you?
It's like my dream job, working with Vince or people like Vince.
Right.
You know, there aren't a lot of people like Vince, but to have somebody be that brilliant and yet that genuinely kind and open and warm to people who were, you know, I was a day player, and like, he didn't need to be very kind to me. He didn't need to be, explain stuff to me. He just said, hey, you got the job, you want to keep it, keep doing the work. And but he was like, he was enthusiastic, he was encouraging, he was someone you wanted to respect. Mm-hmm. and you wanted to impress, not because of his position, but because of his personality, because of his charisma. And you know, he's an amazing dude.
did you have to really, like, you know, your character is like a meth head. Like, what is the mentality getting into character like that? Like, do you have experiences that you're channeling, or you just like kind of know what you're doing and go with it?
Like, there's a little bit of everything. I had two older brothers who were drug addicts.
Okay.
Oldest brother died when he was 50 years old after being clean for 20 years. He died from, you know, they say natural causes at 50 years old. He didn't do meth. He did other stuff, I guess. My other brother, I don't know if he's still doing drugs, but he's still robbing people and conning people.
Oh, boy.
So I didn't grow up with them. They were 10 years older than I was.
Okay.
But I got to know them and their friends throughout my horrible childhood. When I was like 15, I went with my mom and my sister to go pick up my oldest brother from prison when he finally got out.
Oof.
And then like a few weeks later, he and I were roommates, and like she had tossed me out and he was the only one who'd take me in. And so,
Okay.
And then I lived with him and his drug addict friends while I was in college. they were robbing houses and selling drugs, and I was working at Pizza Hut and going to community college trying to get a degree to get the fuck out of that.
Okay. So it's not this squeaky clean slate, and then you just became Skinny Pete. You got some Skinny Pete's around you before, you know.
I was smart enough to not have to learn the hard way. I watched my brothers learn the hard way and went, you know what? I'm good. One of their friends who had just got out of prison had stayed with us. Big, scary dude, still in PTSD from being in prison for many years. He just looked at me and went, if you ever went to prison, you'd be the prom queen.
Oh, God.
But, hey, no thanks.
Yeah.
No. Thank you.
No, it doesn't sound
fun. You know what I'm going to do? Not crime. I'm going to not crime.
I'm going to do the opposite of that.
Yep.
And do my best to avoid that situation. And so instead of being that, I get paid a lot. Every now and then I get paid pretty good money to pretend to be that.
That's awesome.
But I grew up with, like, my shitty mom would, like, tell me how much I was going to be like them when I grew up and how I was going to, I was going to be nothing but trash and I'm just poor white trash and I don't know. And I don't even want to pretend to be that anymore, quite frankly. I mean, if the money's good, I'm
no,
there.
I get it.
That's not what I got into this for. You know, I studied Shakespeare. I studied art. I studied Commedia dell'arte. I didn't, go into this so I could go play the same damn druggie every time. I'm in this so I can explore the characters that I could play and see what else I can create. And I played a lot of other characters.
Yeah.
Just none of them were in shows as big as Breaking Bad.
Right.
Yet, yeah. And so that's my goal is to move on. And, some actors, that's what they find their niche and
their thing.
That's what I want to do. I want to be this guy all the time. I want Gary Oldman's career. I want to be everybody all the time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I know I don't get to, but I want to at least try. I'd rather try to go out for a role that I don't, that they don't think I'm right for, than be given a role that I've done over and over again.
I love that. Mm. Yeah.
And you kind of brought up an interesting question. I mean, obviously we've been chatting a lot about Breaking Bad. Have you done a bunch of other stuff. You've been on The Blacklist. You're on a show I used to love. I hated Fox canceled The Good Guys. I really loved that show.
Yeah.
I mean, as an actor, when you do these podcasts, you almost sit back and say, can we talk about something else other than Breaking Bad? I feel the love, but at the same time, does it always get, guys, I'm an actor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be cool, but I know why I'm here. I know what the audience loves, and that was Breaking Bad. And I know, and I don't mean this to be self-deprecating in too much of a way, but people love Skinny Pete more than they like Charles Baker.
And that's cool. Yeah, I get that.
That's cool. That's comes with the job. It's better than. Better than some, I could be that kid who was on Game of Thrones who played the little child king.
Joffrey.
He gave up. People hated him so bad. And I've seen that. I had a friend who worked in soap operas, and she played an evil villain on a soap opera. And she was in a restaurant one day, and the waitress saw her, and the waitress immediately hated her.
Oh, man.
But she didn't know why. She didn't know why she hated this lady, and she treated my friend like crap the entire time. And then finally it dawned on her why she knew this lady, and she went up and apologized. She went, I'm so sorry. When you came in, I immediately instinctively hated you.
Oh, God, yeah.
Until just now I realized it was because you play a bad character on a TV show.
It's funny you say that because I, in the summers, I coach soccer camps with kids and whatever. And I coach with this one guy. We coach every year, whatever. You know, soccer coach by day, comedy by night. And he's kind of in the same boat, so it's kind of funny. We already have a relationship there. So one day we're BSing. And I don't know how the topic of Star Wars came up. Star Wars comes up. And he's like, well, he's like, you know, I got to tell you something. He's like, my brother-in-law was the voice actor of Jar Jar Binks. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, really? And I'm like, I would love to talk to him on the show because we talked to so many amazing people. And he's like, yeah. He's like, here's the thing. He's like,
I didn't want to talk about
he's
that.
Like, he might talk about it, but he said it severely, like, this guy was an actor, a voice actor. Mm-hmm. He did cartoons. Right. He was, and it like severely affected him, like to a point where he was like in a little bit of depression. I don't want to speak for him, but like depression because people hated the character so much, and it became right. kind of a like the lore of American English, like, oh, Jar Jar Binks, like, ugh. And meanwhile, he tried so hard at it and has done so many other yeah. things. Like,
and
like,
put so much into it, not yeah. because, you know, he
I
was
mean,
just doing
and
his
I understand
job.
It's like, oof, like you get that one thing for better or worse, you know, like, hey, Skinny Pete, everyone loves Skinny Pete, but Jar Jar, everyone hates this character and they're going to put right. it on you. But he was probably being told mm. what to do, how to act, how to do the dialect, you
absolutely.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah. He was given direction. It's like, it's. I like to point. It's rarely our fault. I mean, like
right.
we get hired to do the job.
Right.
It was because someone thought we were good enough. we just went in there doing our best.
Yeah. And like, I still want to talk to this guy. I would
directors
love.
Directors have a lot of say.
I would love to pick
his. When a director doesn't say anything is when you're really, you know, like you do your performance and they're like, okay, thanks. You're like, well, how
was it good?
I do it even? Like, no, yeah. that's okay. Okay.
Yeah. And I would love to talk to this guy still. I would love to pick his brain about, you know, that kind of effect,
I mean,
you know?
Someone once described being in this business, being an actor, as being on this, like, what is it? Your ego is on this pendulum that is swinging between fuzzy soft pillows and razor sharp daggers.
Yeah.
And that's like it's constantly just back and forth. And it really is kind of like that. It's hard. I mean, you don't want to let it feed your ego when people are like, "Oh, I love your work. I love you.
Yeah.
I love you. You're
yeah.
a hero. You're the greatest. You're, you know."
Right.
You don't want to let that feed your ego, but at the same time, how do you not like go, "Oh, that's nice," you know?
Well, like,
and then people stop and you're like,
We just had two musicians on that I also could relate to, and I know we just had Dyson Knight of the Baha Men, and then who let the dogs out, which is this monstrous single throughout the entire world,
right?
And then Dryden Mitchell from Alien Ant Farm, where they covered Smooth Criminal. And we asked them similar question, you know, like he. Same answers, like we do so much more than just these two stupid songs, you know, like it just reminds me of that, you know, like it's like
yeah, I mean, it's, you know,
but everyone would die to have one of those in their
exactly.
in their resume,
like I could end my, and I don't want to, please don't make this be the end of my career, but I could end my career today,
right,
say I'm not going to act again and live happily with my work,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially because of Breaking Bad.
Right.
I don't want to. I'd like to see if I could do more. And,
of course.
And get
absolutely.
Better.
It would suck if this podcast was the end of your career. That would really be.
Yeah.
Man, that was
be on TMZ.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you were on top of the mountain. Now you're 6 feet under from this thing right here. So,
ouch. I'll be all right. I'll be all right.
No.
I'm just like, yeah. Who knows? Sorry, go ahead.
And I was
who knows
just
when this business is going to start back up again.
So, you'll be back. You'll be back.
I hear you. Now, kind of segueing, we were talking about endings. Obviously, the ending to Breaking Bad, like, I think pretty much across the board, everybody said it was like the perfect ending.
Wrapped it up in a bow.
When you guys were shooting that, was there any kind of extra emphasis on, as emotional as probably everything is, saying goodbye to the show, to be like, all right, we can't screw this up? Because it seems like almost every big show just finds a way to mess it up on that last
yeah.
episode somehow.
I think because they had a plan from the beginning. which was that the main character has terminal cancer, so he has to die. Because they had that plan, I think that that made a big difference, and that that took integrity, because they could have, once it got big, they could have kept milking that show for as long as they could.
That's what I always said about the show. There's no fat on the, there's no fat on that show.
Right. Yeah. And that was the smart thing. And that took a lot of integrity, and a lot of, patience and a lot of like smarts. Yeah. And it's, and luckily their, you know, theaters, film schools are like teaching Breaking Bad is like how to do it.
That's
here's,
awesome.
Here's how to end the show. And then here's Dexter, how not to.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, God, yeah.
So it's, you know, we're really, obviously the whole time we were like, don't let anybody down. But we knew, as far as the ending, nobody knew what the ending was, except for the people who were in the ending. Like when I got my script for the very last episode, I got a, it was like a CIA document. It was like mostly redacted with Skinny Pete says this, mostly redacted. Pete says this. And I didn't complain. I like, I knew exactly what they were doing. It was to a point where like when we got into the car and handed Walt the laser pointers, we really didn't know why we were actually handing him those laser pointers. We were not involved in the scene where the laser pointers were being pointed.
Oh, wow. So you had to like insert your own, I think I know, but.
We weren't told what they were for. We were just told, get in the car, hand the laser pointers, say these lines, and go. And that's what we did. And it wasn't until we were at the premiere that we saw the laser pointers hitting Elliot and his wife on the chest and went,
I love that. I love that.
And we joined in with the rest of the audience and went, oh my God, that's us.
I'm the one on the left.
It's my laser. It's my laser. Yeah. I'm the steadier one.
I don't even think people, I think they just put lasers on like a, on a ladder and just had them. I mean, that's from a distance, right. Way to keep them that still. You just like, they just put them on, propped them up on something and turned them on.
Yeah.
Probably had something blocking them and then move the blocking away. Bam, lasers.
I love that, man. It's cool.
So I don't know if anybody knew exactly what was going on for the finale. So, but we knew, we all had faith in Vince. He was going to blow it out of the park. And we were all just curious to see what it was going to be.
That's so cool, man. So, Charlie, I want to thank you so much for your time, man. It's been awesome conversation. It's amazing how this has come together. And like I said, maybe 30 minutes ago, we were talking and put this together. I got to ask you before we go. Breaking Bad ends. I do this amazing role. I go on to other things. I did some cool spots on TV shows. And then the talk of El Camino comes out, at least to the general public. I don't know if you knew beforehand or whatever, but what was that like? Holy shit, Skinny Pete gets another life, you know, like a cat. Back. Like that's gotta be the best feeling ever.
Yeah, that was exactly. I mean, it was everything you wanted to be. One, to have, for me in this business, like the main goal is to be hired again by somebody good.
Right.
Like just that alone, like to be a repetitive, like to have somebody that you worked with go, hey, I want to work with you again, is like the biggest compliment. For it to be Vince Gilligan is like, that's the be all end all.
Right. Yeah.
And so like when they, I was kind of in a daze and they called, they asked me to come and they asked me if I wanted to be in it. Like,
oh, I'd be like, no
thanks.
Nah.
I've got other things to do.
I've got a podcast interview. I got a podcast interview on Thursday. Sorry.
I'm trying to do some podcasts. They called and asked me like, would you be interested? And I'm like, yes. Like if it were a mayonnaise commercial, I'd be like, yeah.
Walter sells mayonnaise.
Whatever you need. Yeah. And they, you know, it was very hush hush. They let me come into Vince's office and read the script. He wasn't there at the time, but I went in there, had to hand over my phone so I could go into his office and read the script with, you know, Walter White's bust looming over my shoulder.
Like a president. Yeah.
And they told me before, you know, like they said, when you see it, you're really going to love Skinny Pete's journey on this. And and that's what we call it. It's everybody's favorite part. It's Skinny Pete's journey. And I'm like already crying. Like, oh, God, man. I can't believe you guys. And so I went in and read it and it blew me away. And I'm a really fast reader. And so I read it and walked out and they're like, you're done already? I was like, should I not be?
They're like, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it. You know?
I was in when they called and said, hey, would you like to? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Work? Yes. I want to work.
Yeah.
But then I read that and I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, and so we, you know, shooting it was weird because it was like the hush hush nature of it. But, right. It was pretty awesome.
I thought it turned out great, man. It was just fun being back in that world again. It was just fun being like, oh, we're back. We get one more little treat, you know?
Right. And it was like a time travel. Yeah, that came up after we finished shooting a few months later. Like, hey, we had to cut one of the scenes, but we're wondering if you'd mind being in this teaser. And like,
do you mind?
I'll refer you to the mayonnaise commercial reply earlier. And so, like, what was going to happen was after Jesse drives off in Badger's car and I parked the El Camino up front, we shot it to the cops all coming into the door, breaking into my house and putting me on the ground and putting me in handcuffs. But they had to cut all of that part for time. So while when we shot it, as if I parked the car out front and then I go into the house, I smoke, take a big hit off of a joint, sit back down, start playing the game, and then I start practicing what I'm going to say to the cops when they come get me. And that's the monologue that I was practicing before they came and got me. And so when they called and said, hey, we had to cut that scene, but
almost better in a way.
We have this scene we'd like to do instead, which is just basically it was like a continuation. Like, okay, I did the scene of me, you know, practicing that thing, playing my video games, looking scared as hell as the cops are busting in my door going, I don't know what to tell you.
It adds like another dimension to that, too, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I love that.
So it was the biggest honor I've had in this business. I mean, up there with the biggest honors I've had in this business. I've worked with Terrence Malick, which is like a pretty big thing for a lot of us. But that's like, those are the two that if I ever wanted to work with anybody, I've already worked with them.
That's awesome, man.
Those are the two. I'll take everybody else.
Yeah. Charlie, I want to thank you for. I don't want to take up all your time, man. We could always talk down the line if you'd come back on. But thank you so much for giving us time on the show. I love how this came together. One of my favorite interviews that we've done. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, no problem.
If people want to check you out or follow you or see what's going on with you, where should they go?
On Twitter and Charles E. Baker.
Right.
On Instagram, the Charles Baker.
Okay.
And it's really all I got right now. I don't do a lot. I have an album on Spotify.
Oh yeah.
I feel weird promoting it. I feel weird not promoting it. It's a soundtrack for a book.
Okay. Cool.
My friend Wayne Barton, who lives in the UK, wrote a book called Peach, and it's about a singer-songwriter. And asked me as an experiment if I would record a soundtrack to accompany the book. And so the soundtrack is basically I'm playing the character who is writing the songs for other musicians. And so it's a very eclectic kind of album because he's writing songs for eclectic musicians, but it's all his demo versions of these different songs.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
And Wayne wrote the songs. I wrote the music, and then I performed them with the help of a friend of mine, Alec Maluski, who produced it and added some bass on one of my tracks.
That's really cool. It's different. I like that.
That's just me. Peach soundtrack, Charles Baker on Spotify. It was a lot of experimental music, me trying to put someone else's words and songs to music. And there was some...
I love that.
Came out fun.
Certainly check that out, man. Thank you.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Again, thank you so much, man.
Yeah. Hey, no problem.
I just wanted to tell you, I told a friend, he just wanted to say you were on one of his favorite shows, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He loved you while you were on that.
Right on.
And
that was fun.
And I guess before I can let you go, now that we have this whole universe, we have Breaking Bad, we had the El Camino, we have Better Call Saul. Do you ever call up Vince and be like, listen, I got this buddy Skinny Pete Badger.
Oh man, yeah.
They don't let me have Vince's number.
otherwise, we'd be like, let's phone him in now. Let's do it.
I can go to like his assistants, but like, and they'll go, okay, well, we'll see. I'm not disliked by them, but like, I'm not their priority right now. And as much as I would love to be, but I don't have any ideas that could be better than what they would come up with. Mm. And I don't know. I feel like I'm too old to keep playing Skinny Pete. I would take it in a heartbeat if they said, hey, we got a Skinny Pete spinoff. But I'm almost 50. Skinny Pete was supposed to be 29. I started playing him when I was 35.
Okay. Wow. All right.
So I was 41 by the time we were done with the series. He was only supposed to be like a year. I mean, that's like,
all right.
And so, like, I have to stay in shape just to like look good in a wife beater, man. That's rough at my age. So yeah, I'll do it if they wanted to, but like, I'd be glad. I've been trying. The one thing I have ever pitched to the Better Call Saul writing staff, and including Vince Gilligan, was the idea of me playing Skinny Pete's dad on Better Call Saul, and having my oldest son, who's now a lawyer, he looks just like me.
Okay, but
like 16 years exactly younger.
Okay,
and so like, you put him in the beanie and have him like in soft focus in the background, sitting in the car waiting for
okay.
me while I'm doing something. I thought it would have been a cool, and you know, they
for
haven't
sure.
said no yet. They were like, great idea. And that's all I heard from them like three or four seasons ago.
Oh,
but you know, that I would love to play that, like to play two different characters in one like universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Would be an awesome.
The yin and the yang of the same guy, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, right. Maybe like we could give some backstory on how Skinny Pete became that way by seeing how his dad, you know, because my first line is Skinny Pete, or one of my first lines is Skinny Pete was, yo, my pops is a contractor. He could probably hook you up after the bathtub falls through the roof.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
What kind of contractor would he need Saul's help? And, you know.
Yeah. There's an episode there for sure.
At least. That's what I was, but, you know, whatever. But I appreciate you guys.
Charlie, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate the time, and stay safe out there, and, you know, you'll be up on your feet before you know it, doing in something cool. I know it.
Right on. So, I appreciate you guys having me.
You know, Mike, there was room for you in as that like fourth member of the drug dealing gang, Badger, Skinny Pete, Combo, Jesse, and, you know, Burr.
I could see that. I mean, Heisenberg would probably be getting complaints about, you know, there's some guy in the RB bathroom talking to himself and all. I told him not to touch the stuff, but
it'd be funny if, like, that scene where, like, Jesse's down in the lab and they're, like, hiding from the DEA's all over the lab and they're trying to, like, they're block, and then everything's just blown because you're like, you don't want to see me, and they just hear you and they're like, oh, it's down here. And then Pinkman and Heisenberg go down. Like, it could have ended at season 4 because of you. But what a great interview.
Two episodes in and the series is over. Great.
What a great interview. What a great dude, man. What a great dude.
I don't know if it's more fun chatting with him or more fun thinking we got to chat with him after getting it set up like less than an hour.
Yeah, well, I guess a little bit of both. But, Berlo, what do you got before we go?
Scott, I returned a little favorite game of ours, the game that's so amazing that apparently ESPN stole it from me.
They did.
As you told me
they
one
did.
Day.
They did.
Yeah. Our game is called Don't Blame Everything on Florida.
Right.
And here's how we play it, ladies and gentlemen. You can play it at home. I'm going to give Scott 4 stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave out all information about where these stories come from. 3 of them are from the great state of Florida because, of course, it is.
Well,
because
everything.
The 4th one, though, is a falsehood, and Scott's got to figure out which one doesn't come from Florida.
Yeah. Scott, so, literally, the other day, listening to ESPN radio, I want to say it was Alan Han Solo, or whatever they call it, with Bart Scott or whatever. I could be wrong, but they were playing our exact game. Which story is from Florida? Which story is not? So,
you're saying I got beef with Bart Scott?
No,
I should call him out.
Yeah, you probably should. Maybe Don LaGreca, when he was on this show, was like, oh, man, these guys are so good. I should take this over to ESPN Radio. And that's probably what happened, I think. That's probably what happened.
I mean, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but...
All right, let's do it, brother.
Some money.
Let's do it.
All right, first story, Scott. Man steals pool floats for sex.
Florida.
A man has been arrested and charged after the police department said he stole pool floats for sex, as he says, instead of violating a woman. Authorities stopped Christopher Monin, 35, on his bike around 1:25 a.m. as a suspicious person. Mm-hmm. Authorities say Monin was carrying a white garbage bag filled with deflated pool floats. According to officials, in the past 7 months, the city has been plagued with burglaries in which the suspect cuts the screens and enters a victim's back pool area, stealing only pool floats.
Oh, there. So he's stealing them from people. I thought it was a store. Stealing them from
people. Yeah, he's not going into Walmart and get these. No, he knows he wants a prime one. He wants the stuff that got that human aroma.
Got a
on
couple
it.
Miles on it. All right,
absolutely. There have been 13 reports made at this time. The victim stated that they have been robbed several times by Monin, but only reported the burglary after the second or third time it happened. Monin spoke with authorities and said he went into the backyard pool area because he was able to see the floats from the road. He added that he had stolen several pool floats from multiple locations and would occasionally have to cut the screen to get inside. Monin drove officers to the vacant house where he kept his pool floats. Mm-hmm. Officials say there were approximately 75 floats inside, including ones that the victims described. Monin told authorities that he sexually gratifies himself with the pool floats instead of, I'm going to change the word to violating women, but you get the gist.
Jesus. So here's my question, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he stole one pool float, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so say he does his thing now. Now, is he approaching these pool floats as they're, like, different individuals? Like, each pool float's different? Like, how different, like, how great can a pool float be? I mean, I feel like one pool float is enough, but I guess it's the addiction of it all, I guess. And I guarantee this guy is on some kind of serious drugs.
Well, Scott, you know, ladies always ask why men with beautiful women cheat on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of the same thing. There's some kind of like pool noodle that's depressed because Mr. Monin went out and got a new like blow up dinosaur.
Okay. Okay. Do I guess now or do I guess at the end here?
Nah, let's hear all four and then you decide, Scotty.
Okay.
Story number two. Man arrested for beating up Uber driver with antenna and bystander's cane. A man was arrested Thursday after police reports say he beat up an Uber driver with a water bottle, a car antenna, and a cane belonging to an elderly bystander. Police say on June 6th, the Uber driver attempted to terminate the ride, making 26-year-old Denzel Johnson angry. According to reports, Johnson hit the victim with a water bottle, then got out of the car and broke off the antenna. He used the antenna to strike the victim in his left shoulder. Johnson then took a cane from an elderly bystander and hit the Uber driver in his right shoulder. The Uber driver ended up with deep bruises and lacerations. He was able to pick Johnson out of a photo pack a few days later with help from the police. Johnson was arrested Thursday morning at 10:30 a.m. He has already bonded out of jail.
Okay. See, I feel like this could happen in a lot of places. The pool float guy, I'm just telling you my thinking. The pool float guy sounds very Floridian to me. I feel like some weird guy that beats people with antennas could be universal. So
here's my question to the driver. So he whips you with a water bottle.
Right.
You stop the car, he gets out.
Right.
I can somewhat understand in like the argument the guy goes over and rips your antenna out. I don't know why you stay for the antenna, let alone to get the whooping of the antenna. Then you wait for the guy to say, hold up, as he sees some old dude crossing the street, steals his cane, and still has time to come over and whack you in the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. There's a missing part to that story that we're not hearing.
Maybe the driver was the pool guy and he gets off on the hard stuff.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
All right.
Story number three, man arrested after pelting girlfriend with McDonald's sweet and sour packets. A man pelted his girlfriend in the head and face area with sweet and sour sauce packets Sunday because he was angry she had brought the wrong food from McDonald's.
Do the sweet and sour packets still come in like the plastic container with the kind of like, you know, because those things you could really hurl. Like that.
Yeah, I think all their sauces come in now. Okay. Like, I know like the buffalo sauce, and I think all the dipping sauces come in those like little square containers.
Yeah, you can get some torque on that. You could whip one of those.
Just sell that to Jesus Oscar Ferrer Jr., 30, who attacked his girlfriend with whom he had a child in a couple's motel room, police said. A struggle ensued, and Ferrer allegedly pinned his girlfriend to the ground. He placed his palm on her face and pressed her head into the ground using his body weight, which prompted the woman to rip off part of his beard, the complaint said. Fair was charged with battery earlier this year involving the same woman at another motel, the report says. He pleaded no contest to the misdemeanor charge, was sentenced to time served, and paid a $750 fee in fines and court costs, according to the report.
Okay.
You think she was kind of like, oh, well, this is different. We're going to a different motel room. He brought me to the fancier one.
In Florida, yes. this one I'm not as sold either, being completely Florida. It could be, obviously. I mean, because basically that's what happens down there. But this one's throwing me off a little bit too. So I got to hear the fourth one.
Okay, fourth one. Man acquitted after two allegedly enter wrong home with machetes for sexual fantasy, scare stranger. Two men snuck into a bedroom with machetes after being hired to carry out a stranger's sexual fantasy of being tied up in his underwear and stroked with a broom, only to discover they had the wrong address.
You're so dirty. Let me just sweep the dirt off you.
You think he's like, no, 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 use the other side. Use the other side.
Oh, God. Yeah, probably.
The pair made their apologies and left the startled victim beside as soon as they realized their mistake. One of the men, Terrence LeRoy, has now been acquitted of entering the home to intimidate while armed with an offensive weapon after the district court accepted his explanation, conceding the facts of the case are unusual. The judge set out of his reasons for not guilty verdict, saying the evidence did not suggest the men's actions were intentional. They carried the machetes either as a prop or something to use in that fantasy, he said. The fantasy was unscripted, and there was discretion as to how it would be carried out. According to court documents, a man wanted a broom handle to be rubbed around his underwear. He was willing to pay $5,000 if it was really good, court documents said.
Here's the thing. I like that these guys, they... You know they were just there to murder him, and then they got caught, and they were like, "Oh yeah, it was just a fantasy he wanted." You know, we weren't here to chop him up with machetes. We were just coming in to do a fantasy. Like, they were definitely there to murder him, and they just tried to double down and get out of that.
So you're saying they're not only killers, they're killer improvers.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. That's yes. Amazing. Yes. And that's the old improv game. Yes, we're here and we're here to have fun. That's all.
Oh, look, there's a broom. Who wants the broomstick?
Oh, man. Okay.
All right, Scott. So your choices are
pool float.
Man steals pool floats for sex.
Antenna.
Man arrested for beating up Uber driver with antenna and bystander's cane. Man arrested after pelting girlfriend with McDonald's sweet and sour packets. And man acquitted after two alleged enter wrong home with machetes for sexual fantasy scare stranger.
All right, so I have a gut guess, and then I have a more Floridian guess. Okay.
Okay. Let's hear it.
So okay. So pool float. I don't think you would give me the non-Florida one up front, and it sounds so Florida-y. I'm gonna go with the pool float is from Florida.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want me? Do you want me to just answer you?
Well, let me run through them and see if I get them all right, and then we'll go from there. Okay.
All right.
Now, antennas, okay. Antennas I thought was a little ambiguous. It kind of could be from anywhere, but I thought you might have threw that in there because it was kind of wasn't so Florida, but probably did take place in Florida. So originally I had not Florida. I'm going to go with antennas Florida, okay?
Okay.
The McDonald's one sounds so Floridian, but a lot of McDonald's out there, a lot of white trash out there. I initially thought Florida. I'm going to put that as the not Florida.
Okay.
And then I'm going to put the machete people as Florida. So I'm going to go Florida, Florida, not Florida, Florida.
All right, let's go through the list. Right,
go one at a time here. So let me...
Yeah.
Pool floats.
So, man steals pool floats for sex occurred in Palm Bay, Florida.
All right. I knew it was too Florida. It matched the environment. It had pool floats, it had swimmy stuff. Totally Florida. Okay.
Man arrested for beating up Uber driver with antenna and bystander's cane. That was St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yeah, because that was the one I was gonna be like, well, that can happen anywhere. But I thought you threw that you're trying to trick me there. Florida.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Here's where it gets a little gray because I could go either way on the two.
Okay, Scott, man acquitted after two allegedly enter wrong home with machetes for sexual fantasy scare stranger was Australia. Sorry, Scott. Man arrested after pelting girlfriend with sweet and sour packets was Tampa, Florida.
All right. See, I will admit that loss because I thought the hard one was going to be in the antenna one. I got the last two mixed up instead of the first two. And then I was hoping you wouldn't throw a number one at me being the non-Florida one. That's really tough. But all right,
some pretty great stories there. You must agree.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're pretty good. They're pretty great. I mean, you're right there too. You could drive down to Florida and have some of this fun if you're bored. But
yeah. That I can go down there, and I'm like, no, no, look at the license, and they'll let me go.
Georgian man steals pool floats.
Izzy walks into her Disney room, and what's up with all this? Are we getting a pool?
No, definitely not.
I told you not to go in there.
But
fantasy.
What a great night of the podcast here, man. Anything to promote before we go?
As we were doing small business, I'm going to promote a small business that was also a former guest of ours. Sky Falconry, Scott, is open again.
Hey!
That's
in San Diego, right?
Alpine, California, San Diego area, yeah. If you want to have an adventure where you hike and go into mountains and you have falcons that land on your hand and all, learn about their flight and so forth. We had them on, I want to say about 3 years ago. Yeah, we had a great time. We're still waiting for our falcon to be named after us.
Yeah, Danny Glover.
The Danny Glover.
Verbal Shenanigans bird.
Verbal Shenanigans falcon. But if that sounds exciting to you, this kind of adventure, check them out. Their site is skyfalconry.com, and they're out of Alpine, California. They were really fun people, and give them some support. We know California's pretty locked down. If you're going to have some weird and crazy fun, why not do it with some wildlife?
And I will tag that. That was episode 189. 189, we had Snow on that show. Not Al Snow. We had Snow, the guy who made the smash hit Informer. And Sky Falconry. So that was a great episode. You should definitely go back and listen to that. I will promote a fellow comic here. And
what the heck?
Oh, that's his Instagram actually. Promote a fellow comic here. He is a very funny man by the name of Matt Jenkins. He's one of the best joke writers I know as far as pure jokes. He has a book out there called Now I'm Booked Everywhere, which is kind of like a comedy special on paper, in a book. So you could go buy that from his website, Mac Jenkins Comic, or just look up Now I'm Booked Everywhere by Matt Jenkins, and I guarantee you won't be upset. It's a really cool product. Go support local artists. Go support comics who are out of work. So check out Matt Jenkins Comedy. Other than that, I want to give a quick shout out to our guy, Jim Miller, Mike. Jim Miller taking it down, winning 3 out of 4 in the UFC. Been on the podcast twice.
He's killing it out there, man.
Yeah. It was funny because he was describing how he's not feeling any symptoms from Lyme disease anymore. And he feels like he's starting to get his like athleticism back. So maybe we see Jim Miller. I want to see Jim Miller versus Cowboy Cerrone again. Because they're tied for the most fights in the UFC. I thought that would be a great way for the two of them to kind of, you know, celebrate their. So Dana White, if you're listening, which I know you are, Cowboy Cerrone, yeah. Jim Miller. But guys,
I know you're on that fight island in the Middle East, just listening to Verbal Shenanigans. So just write it down or listen to this show again, and you're welcome.
And that's it, guys. Guys, you've been great. Everybody's been great. We've been getting a lot of good feedback on things. We have so many amazing guests, and tonight was just so it threw the best kind of wrench into our plans. It was amazing. So I want to thank Charles Baker for coming on. And that's it, guys. If you like us, please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and please share our podcast and listen to it because that's the most important. And leave a comment on iTunes. Guys, that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back. Bye.
Night, people. Keep your machetes out of your neighbor's rooms.